Welcome to Disarming Persuasion, the podcast for sales and business leadership professionals. My name is Dave Rosenberg, and I am the founder and principal at Locked On Leadership, a consulting firm with a mission to replace Thank God It's Friday with Thank God It's Monday. With me is my co-host, a man who can literally teach sales with one hand tied behind his back, Darren Cecil. Darren, what are we going to discuss today?
Well, Dave, I'm kind of curious. I'm sure our listeners would be as well. As how'd you get involved in leadership? Tell me about that.
Wow. Great question, Darren. You know, for years, of course, I ran various companies. And as I got more and more experienced, I started seeing how what I did and what I said could really have a direct effect on how people responded and, you know, how they acted. It was almost a little bit like if you ever watch that show with The Dog Whisperer, when people come to them with problems about their dogs, the dogs are never the problem. It's always the people. Mm-hmm. And I saw that same correlation. So I started working on how do I get the best out of the people who were working with me. And I think the impact of that really hit home when I was the president at Priority Moving. When I got hired there, I was initially hired as vice president, and I was responsible for running the inside office, the sales side of it, the non-operations side. And our estimator, our salesperson, outside salesperson, we called him an estimator, was a guy who had a ninth grade education, grew up in a not very good part of town. He'd been on the trucks. He'd been a very successful mover, apparently. This was before I was there. And by the time I was hired, he had moved his way up into estimating. But he had no sales training whatsoever. And one of the first things I attempted to do was to have him move off of his hourly plus spiff structure and compensation plan, go to a straight commission plan, because I believe salespeople should participate in their own success. They shouldn't have to worry about working overtime. This guy was working overtime and putting in for overtime, and the company shouldn't have to either. If the person's very efficient and very good at what they do, and they don't have to work hard because they work smart and they do well, great. They should see their reward, because we pay salespeople for selling, not for how many hours they work. And so I approached him and I said, hey, I want to switch your compensation plan. Here's what I'm thinking about. And at this point in my career, I'd been around for a while. I knew not to just make it happen. If I just said to him, here's what we're doing, it would have taken the wind out of his sails. And so we sat down and had a conversation, and he wasn't comfortable with it. He said, you know, I work really hard and I don't want to give up my hourly rate. I have all this overtime, and it's important to me. And he was being successful, and I didn't want to stop that. And I remember saying, well, we can revisit this later. Now, this is early on my tenure there. Now, imagine this for a second. We're making changes in the company, and at first, everybody's fighting me because they don't understand the changes. And as time goes on, they start seeing that everything we're doing, and I've always involved people in those changes, so it wasn't just me unilaterally making them. They started seeing the why, the where, the reasoning behind it, and they started to trust me. Fast forward a year, and I had been working with Carl, this gentleman. I'm going to cut that part out. Mm-hmm. I've been working with this gentleman now for a year on his sales skills, and he had been seeing more and more success. And so now the year has gone by, and I sit down with him, and I take out his W-2, and I said, you did pretty good last year. And he had a mid 60,000, somewhere 65,000 mas o menos income. And again, for a gentleman with a ninth grade education, that's not bad living. You know, he was doing well for himself and he was pretty happy and satisfied. And I said, let me show you something. Here's what you would have done if we had made the change a year ago. Any idea what that number was?
Probably six figures.
Exactly. He left $40,000 on the table because he wanted to work at an hourly rate. And because, frankly, he didn't trust me. And I don't blame him. He didn't trust me. I was new. But now it's a year later and we had a lot more trust. And I said, what do you think? Do you want to do this now? And at this point, he said, sure. And we made the change. Now, point of this story isn't that I got him to make the change. It took leadership skills to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of the story is what happened afterwards. About 2 years after that happened, the company got sold. And about 4 months after the sale, I had moved on. I was, as I said, by that point, I was the president. And in any sale, right, senior management typically goes away. Mm-hmm. And I got a text from him on that Father's Day after the sale had closed. And the text said, Happy Father's Day. Well, that's really nice. But I texted back to him, hey, man, thank you, but I don't have any kids. It's his response that floored me. The text I got back from him said quite simply, yeah, I know, but you're like a father to me.
Wow. It's,
yeah. See, when we made that change, it changed his life for the better. His son is in private school and doing very well. I will tell you, because I stay in touch with him. In fact, I just saw him last week. He now owns his own moving company. He is doing phenomenal. That's the power of leadership. It's not about improving the business. It is, but it doesn't. That's not really what it's about. It's about improving the lives of the people you work with, and by extension, their families' lives, their friends' lives. It's about making everything better. It is the ultimate win-win-win. The company wins. You personally win, both in the reward and satisfaction of seeing things grow. And frankly, if you're in a leadership position, you're probably financially participating in the win. So that's a good thing. And more importantly, and most importantly, is the people around you, your team wins and their family wins because their lives are better. You know, we spend a minimum of 40 hours a week at our work.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge chunk of our lives. But we have the saying, TGIF, right? We look forward to Fridays because why? Because most people don't love what they do. I want to replace that with TGIM. Thank it's Monday. Because if you love what you do, it's not a job. And everybody's better off. And that's why I do what I do.
That's an amazing story. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I got to throw this back at you, right? I mean, I've known you for probably 12 years now. Yeah, something like that, 12 years. I know you're really passionate about sales, but what's the backstory there? How come you do what you do?
Well, thanks for asking. I mean, that would take a long time. I'll try to give you the Cliff Note version. So you and I know that I was born with my left hand missing below the elbow, hence I think, you know, can sell with one hand tied behind his back, which I thought was very funny, by the way. Well, as a kid growing up, when I was 7, I was poster child for Easter SEALs. So I developed public speaking skills, and that's important if you're going to be in sales. Also around the same time, I was asked to meet with soldiers coming back from the Vietnam War that were missing a limb, and they asked me to talk with them. So talk about developing counseling skills at a very early age. And as you know, if you're not really counseling, you're not selling, which also in turn developed my listening skills, which we always know if you're not listening, you're not selling. So that came into play. And then the other thing was I used to sit in front of an amphitheater in front of like 100 doctors. They may have been interns, but when you're 7 up until 17, they look like doctors. And I was probably like a human guinea pig that they would ask and poke and prod. And I would have to be able to think quickly on my feet. Also, another important skill for selling. So that was kind of the impetus for that. My background is in counseling. I taught at the university level. And then it just seemed to me a natural fit that there's a lot of bad salespeople out there. they're arrogant and selfish and they don't listen and they're taught the wrong way. Some of it, it's not their fault. And so I can illustrate a story about why I do what I do. There was a gentleman in a training program that I ran weekly, and his company paid for him and his colleagues to attend. And it was about the third week in, and he sat there with his arms crossed. You've seen the type. And he's not interested in being there. And after class, I said, can I talk to you after class? He said, sure. And I said, you don't like it here, right? He said, no, I don't. I said, that's okay. We're going to negotiate a hostage settlement. He said, what do you mean? I said, you feel like a hostage here? And he's like, yeah, I do. I said, not a problem. I said, I'll just talk to the owner of the company and we'll get you out. He said, you can't do that because my company is paid for me to be here. I said, oh no, your company hasn't paid for you. Your company has paid for a seat. And so I promise you nothing will happen to you. The only thing I ask is if you try it for 3 weeks, if it doesn't work out, then let me know and we'll get you out. And I promise you no challenges. And he said, okay. So fast forward several months later, and he came up to me and said, okay, how much is it going to be? I said, it's free. Your company is paid for you. And he said, no, let me share something with you. At first, I didn't like the training. I didn't think it made sense. It was counterintuitive, and I didn't want to try it. I tried it, and not only am I number two in my company, I'll never be number one because number one has a client that orders millions, but I'm number two. And I sell in Mexico, and a lot of my people that I have to compete against are bribing potential clients. I'm competing against bribes and I'm winning, and I've never offered any bribe. I ask good questions. I uncover pain. He said, that's not what I want to talk about. He said, my kids say I'm a better dad because of what I've gone through your training, because your training is not really about sales. It is, but it's not, he said. And my girlfriend says I'm a better boyfriend. He said, I want to write you a check tonight for you to change my brother's life. Would you please change my brother's life? And to me, there's been many examples of that, just like you have. And that says to me, I'm making more of an impact, not counseling students on a university level, but impacting business owners, salespeople, coaches, consultants, and professional service people in such a way that I never could in my previous life.
Wow. So because of the work he did with you on how to sell better, not only did it improve his professional life, but every other aspect of his life as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so, absolutely. Yes.
So there's a theme here.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it? Why do you think that is, that when people are great leaders or great salespeople, that they're impacting people's lives, not just their workplace?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons for that, Dave. And I think one is, with your leadership ability and my sales ability, it's really not about sales. So one of my clients said to me, your program is a life-changing program that increases sales. But she said, you really can't say that because it's kind of too woo-woo. And she's a very woo-woo person. But I'm a Boston guy and you're a Philly guy. Woo-woo doesn't really fit as well in our communities where we grew up. Is that fair to say?
I would say it's not. It's fair to say that woo-woo doesn't fit in. But I think what's also fair to say is that these are two communities where neighborhood means something.
Absolutely.
And where people will give it off the shirt off their backs. You have no better friend, no worse enemy, but no better friend.
Isn't that the truth? And sometimes when Boston and Philly collide, you may have no better friend or no worse enemy as well. And we can save that for another time. And what she said to me is, instead of calling it a life-changing program that enhances sales, I'm going to tell people you're a sales training program that enhances lives. And I think you could probably echo that same sentiment in what you do with the story that you shared. We are both about changing lives. And it's funny for me, if I say I'm going to create a life-changing program, people tend to run. But if I say to them, I can increase your sales 40 to 200%, they're all ready to listen. And then they find out very quickly, wait a minute, this is not just a sales program. I have to look at other areas of my life. And that's what makes it so exciting for me.
Yeah. And what's really interesting to me about what you just said is that, and as a student of yours for many years on the sales side, is that we know that people justify rationally a decision that they've already made emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we look at that and we go, okay, I'm going to justify this decision because I'm going to get an ROI. I'm going to increase my sales this exponential number. And so I'm really not paying for the classes investing because I will see a return on investment. Mm-hmm. But the real reason they're doing it is because they know they're going to feel better about themselves and about what they do and how they do it, because they're helping other people. Because in sales, it's about helping people. There's this misnomer out there because of all the terrible salespeople that sales is about ramming something down somebody's throat that they don't want, they don't need, and forcing them to buy it as if you put a gun to their head. But nothing could be farther from the truth, could it?
If they're trained properly, yes. It's about asking good questions to find out if there's a challenge that the salesperson can solve with his or her product or service. And just like a good doctor, doctors ask a significant amount of questions before they make a recommendation. If not, they could be sued for medical malpractice. I would suggest to you a lot of salespeople, business owners, consultants, and coaches commit business malpractice. They ask one or two questions and they swoop in almost like a vulture that's looking for the next big kill, rather than finding out the real compelling reason why someone wants to work with you to alleviate those challenges. And so absolutely, if they ask good questions, that's not really about selling. It's a very consultative approach to understanding someone's challenges. And there are so many people out there that I was giving a speech once, and this woman said to me at this speech in front of a lot of people, she said, well, I like networking events, but what happens if someone tries to hit on you at a networking event? And I paused for a moment and I said, let's see, that happens never. But if it did, I would try to sell them a mortgage or, you know, a 30-year, 15-year, 10, 5-year arm, whatever it may be. And you'll find at networking events, people tend to leave. If that doesn't work, life insurance or real estate, because we have such a disdain for a lot of old school salespeople, we can tend to clear the room fairly quickly.
It's funny you say that. So I was at a chamber event, and I was very active in my chamber, and there was a young couple there who had just started a coaching practice, and the chamber staff had said to them, go talk to Dave. He started his practice not too long ago. I'd probably been in business for a couple years at that point. And so the three of us were sitting down chatting, and I was asking them about, you know, what they're looking to do and all the sort of usual questions, finding out about them. When all of a sudden a gentleman walks up to us, he hands us his business cards. He was an insurance salesman, and he starts asking us about our insurance needs and telling us about how great he is. And I remember my skin crawled. And it's just like, and I actually had to stop, and I had to go Philly on him, not full Philly, but, you know, compared for California. And I just looked at him and said, excuse me, we're in the middle of a kind of sensitive conversation here. Can we talk later? And he felt flustered and he walked away. And so I didn't think about trying to sell him back there, and I'm not as clever as you. And I remember just turning to a couple and I just said to him, okay, there's a great lesson there on what not to do ever at one of these events. And I don't remember if I've ever seen that person again at that chamber event. And I go regularly, and I'm pretty, I know everyone who attends. I don't think this gentleman has ever been back. So yeah, it's important that you listen more, talk less. We're going to probably spend a lot of time on that in the coming weeks and months to come. Mm-hmm. What would you say to our listeners right now who are hearing this and going, well, this is kind of a weird combination. Usually there's a sales podcast or there's a leadership podcast, but we're doing both.
I think what makes sense for me is the same skill sets that you use in making effective leaders, I'm using to make effective salespeople. You mentioned the leadership is important. I mentioned sales is important. What's really important in leadership, you said it already, is listening. Sales listening is everything. We want to understand what's really going on. It's essential. I think we both will spend more time talking about this, but we both want to make sure the people we're leading or the people we're selling to feel okay. And so there's a sense of whatever we can do to make someone feel okay. I think that's a bridge between both sales and leadership. We're both also talking about motivating and coaching and developing. And a lot of the same skill sets are in both leadership and sales. That would be my like 1 minute, 30,000 foot view of the similarities. What's your perspective on that, Dave?
I think you're spot on. I want to sort of go a little higher in altitude here and take a 50,000 foot view. The one thing, well, I shouldn't say the one thing, but one thing from a big picture perspective that both sales and leadership have in common is our objective is the same, which is to solve problems. Mm-hmm. We are both looking to solve problems. Now, in sales, you are hoping that your product or service that you're selling is solving their problem. And obviously you do a lot of work on the front end to make sure the people you're sitting in front of are more likely than not to have a problem that you sell. And then the skill in sales is uncovering that and making them aware of what all the issues are, helping them get out of themselves. This is the counseling piece that, that your background has, so they can bring to the surface all the things that they may not be consciously aware of their problems and what the implications are. So then you can make sure your solution fits that. From a leadership perspective, we don't always know what the problems are we're going to solve, nor do we necessarily need to solve them. It's our job to empower others to solve them for us, mm-hmm. but the skills to do that are the same. And so what it comes down to is the base skills that people need to do one are also required for the other, which is frankly why most, I don't know about most, but many, many presidents and CEOs of companies frequently come through the sales pipeline mm-hmm. in professional development.
I would agree. That's a great perspective on that. And so let me ask you a question. Why should our listeners listen to this podcast? What's in it for them? We always talk about with them, right? People have two radio stations on their heads at all times, you know, in their heads at all times. One, WIFM, what's in it for me? And two, MMFIAM, make me feel important. I am. So what's the benefit of people listening to this podcast from your perspective?
I think the benefit is they're going to get two people who have between them half a century or more of sales and leadership experience, who have built successful teams, both in sales as well as in other areas, who will be able to break down for them the real scientific reasons for doing things so that they can improve other people's lives. And I think that's the important thing I want to talk about. This is not about improving your own life. That mm-hmm. will happen, but if that's your objective, I would say don't listen to our next episode mm-hmm. because the goal should be to improve other people's lives. And when you focus outward on other people, great things happen to everybody. That's how you find the win, win, win. And I'm all about the triple win. So if you want to know how to do that, I would say subscribe to our podcast and stand by. So what can people expect on our next episode, Darren?
Well, I think you brought up earlier, you're going to hear a lot about listening skills and effective communication, and that might be a great place to have our next episode, talking about what makes someone an effective communicator. How can they listen more effectively? You know, whether it's in their personal or professional lives, people have probably said to them several times, you're not listening. And so we're going to give them tips and strategies so they can listen more effectively. So like you said, it's not just changing and enhancing their lives. It's all the people that they interact with, whether it's in a business relationship or personal relationships, they'll be much more effective at communication. I think that might be a great place to start our next segment.
I think you're right. So if you are listening to us now and you either have challenges because your team isn't responding like you think they should, then learn how to listen. And guess what? Your team will listen to you. Or if you're looking for an edge over other salespeople and you want to uncover things that they don't, so that you can present a solution that is custom tailored to your clients, where they're just giving a random or generic solution, then you need to learn how to listen and you need to tune in for our next episode. That concludes another episode of Disarming Persuasion. My name is Dave Rosenberg.
And this is Darren Cecil.
Visit our websites at LockedOnLeadership.com or DarrenCecil.com. Follow us on social media. You can find the links in the show notes. Remember, if they fail to make a decision, you failed to disarm them.